Joining me today on the show, beauty guru Miss April Barton, proprietor of the 303 Salon at the Chelsea Hotel. Converge is the word. April, welcome to the Culture Catch.
Why, thank you, Dusty.
Why fashion? Why pop culture? How do they commingle?
They don't in my world at all.
Why?
Politics, maybe just life, every breath, every minute, every year, every decade.
But your thing has got a real pop culture edge. You know, you go to a typical salon and it's just like kind of fake, phony.
They're following suit, but it's more of an artistic vibe and just the sign of the times and the conversation that goes down and where the person is in their life and what they do for a living. And it's basically transformed in the chair. And then once people piggytail it or piggyback it,
right,
you know, and start replicating what's coming out or what's being seen that looks appealing. But it's basically created here, and by the time it hits the classification of being pop culture, wouldn't that be something classified after the fact?
Well, yeah, I think, you know, if you're starting a trend, it's kind of hip and groovy, and then when it hits the mass market and it latches on,
right?
You know, so you may create a hair cut like the Dusty. Remember that?
Yeah.
And then you know, the general population says, well, you know, I want a cut that makes me look like so and so, and you go, oh well, okay, that's
right,
not
that
about
wouldn't,
me.
That wouldn't.
But that doesn't fly with you because you come up here and it's like each person is a work of art for you.
Exactly.
Why do you think pop culture has latched on to the beauty and the fashion industry so much? It seems as if actors, musicians, kind of define style now. Have they always, maybe?
Yeah, it's funny. There's an article that I haven't fully read myself in the LA Saturday Times last week, and they quoted me about this whole 70s fluctuation, which I call the 2070s influence. And for me, it's nostalgia, but for the kids, it's, you know, it's a mark. It's something that they're trying to stay, so it's very original for them.
Right.
And I feel the flair, and I feel the length and the rebellion, and, you know, basically it signifies to me that they're not okay with how society is being dictated to them, and they just don't believe it anymore. So therefore, they're just sort of reaching out and finding themselves in different, and that creates this fashion trend.
Right.
Bell bottoms start coming back, or the this start coming back, and, you know, it comes back for us, but a lot of the kids that are like dabbling in it, it's brand new, it's fresh for them.
Plus, they have all the other influences. There seems to be a real ability today, if you're an artist, to stamp your own look and take all of these different looks from culture and kind of define who you are. You don't have to be a Gap baby or a Banana Republic yuppie.
Yeah, that world kind of doesn't exist. For the past 10 years, it doesn't exist. People find me through this particular vein of undergoing this, you know, way of the Chelsea Hotel and my placement and my reputation of being in the city for 20 years. So I'm not exposed to it at all. I see it out there and I see the dictation and I see even the things that I've created sort of be exploited or, mm-hmm. you know, going to LA and seeing like mohawks or choppy cuts or whatever that they're sort of, you know, just sort of latched on again.
How did you come to...
But getting back to those musicians and the actors, I think anybody that has a really balls-out integrity of where they're at in their work, you sort of meet similar minds.
Right.
You know, if someone's doing, like you being on the step with what's going on right now, you know, this isn't something you're following suit, this is something you're feeling and moving forward with, and that's exactly how the cuts go and the fashion goes, and you start creating this world, in my opinion, the top 10 percentile that can actually predict and move the waves of right. the populations.
So there's really no pretense up here, even though people could say, well, art can be pretentious when it's trying to dictate fashion and style, you know, because a real artist wouldn't even be concerned with that.
No, at all. At all. I mean, it's not ironic to see, but it's funny to see things that, you know, like cutting Leo Villarreal, the beautiful breath behind me, this light fixture, mm-hmm. an amazing artist that I've known forever, client and friend. He came in, what, maybe 7-8 years ago, and I said, I'm feeling like a Roman warrior helmet. I'm feeling war. I'm feeling this. And he's one of these, what's that thing out in the desert that everybody goes to?
Oh, the Burning Man.
Yeah, one of the original goers of Burning Man and, you know, married to Yvonne Force, the art curator for the Rockefellers. They're just everywhere and everything. She's doing music. He's doing installations, changing the way that you view a city or right. how you see things. So I had this organic feeling about something, and, it, you know, on the phone with Yvonne, you know, she's thinking of giving me a mohawk, and, you know, it flared up. No mohawks. And then, you know, Tom Ford or Prada or something will come out in a magazine a couple years later, and it's like, give him the mohawk. It's like, I will not do any such thing.
Right.
You know, when it's gone, it's gone, so I live completely and viably by the moment of what I'm feeling, and my clients and my reputation give me that leeway, which is incredible, really fortunate.
I like what you said. You said people seek you out. You really don't have to advertise. Maybe initially it was tough for you, but you always had your foot, one foot in the rock and roll community. You styled shoots for Rolling Stone and the various pop culture magazines. Did that help build up your clientele?
Yeah, because it puts you out there in the avenues where they can readily reach you and contact you. I mean, I've been underground for a good 10 years. And it's never been, I've been cutting since I stepped foot here. And it doesn't matter if it's a taxi driver or the plumber's daughter or the maintenance guys or, you know, whoever it is, I haven't stopped. But it definitely, the caliber of clients and how many clients of mine are now in the public eye. Mm-hmm. And how much kind of rides on it. But it doesn't really change anything. It could be, you know, the super's girl for his prom, or it could be, you know, Bono. It's all the same vein to me.
Right. That's fresh. That's nice.
It is.
There's not, you know, it's great because you think of the typical Madison Avenue place that gets the press, and this is the antithesis. You can get a tattoo here. You know, you can try on your own robe. I like that. Pick out your own
Yeah, pick out your own robe. It sort of sets you up for it. I mean, and it wasn't planned to do that. It just so happens that I'm loving how this is literally being transformed into, like, black and white, this vibe and what I've created. And basically, it's anti-salon. I've been working in the salon system for 25 years. So when I opened here at the Chelsea Hotel, it was my way of saying, I don't want it anymore. I cut great hair. I want to do it, but I want to... a vibe I want off the beaten path. I don't want to be exposed. I don't want to be like marketed, like this is what's expected of me and this is what's expected for a salon to look like. I want it comfortable with exceptions to every rule. And, you know, more and more it starts coming out in print and acknowledged for those right things. So the whole move of me coming here was rebellious in a really authentic sense. I wasn't doing it to, you know, the minute I opened doors 10 years ago, it became a really big, like, hair salon and the Chelsea Hotel, this and that, and all this notoriety that I thought I was looking for prior to coming here was, like, flooding, literally coming through the doors. And it wasn't, you know, like, who thought to open here. It was basically a place that I felt could house me and my beliefs in artistic about cutting hair. I'm an actress, I read scripts, I do plays, I direct, you know, so I would have like long table readings here and then cut hair all day and then rehearse till 3 a.m. So I just wanted a space that would lend itself to my life.
Right.
And then, you know, it took on its whole Sweet 303 persona. And I was very rebellious to call it a salon until people would turn me on from, you know, people from France or Paris that would say, you know, the true meaning of salon is where artistic minds meet, gathered, and it transformed and inspired each other. And, you know, like the American market, you know, we get a hold of something and we pummel it to the ground and categorize it and pinpoint it and make it all about hair, where it sort of lost its initial integrity about what a salon was.
Right.
So I was like, okay, Suite 303 Salon. I finally like grew into, you know, what that was about. And so it reveals itself to me daily.
April, this is great. I didn't real, you know, I knew, but I forgot about your artistic endeavors prior. You know, everyone who is an artist has a day job, so cutting hair was your day job while you pursued your acting and your theater work.
Yes, maybe. I mean, I've been cutting hair since the age of like 14, 15.
Oh, okay.
So it's sort of like, you know, if you cook, it's not necessarily a job.
Right.
It's something I did, and I did well, and I got paid, so it did support me in moving to England for a year in training and moving to New York and afford me everything from great dinners to, you know, going out to showing face anywhere and to collectively getting this clientele that sort of can elevate any endeavor that I'm doing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I sort of feel like, you know, bad for my hair person when I talk about, you know, that it's something that supports me in my acting. I mean, being a producer and being able to have artistic rights over a film that I make or something due to the money that hair has brought me, it's sort of a whole thing.
You don't, you're a Renaissance woman. You don't really view it as being separate, which is good.
No, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I mean, if you're creating something, it doesn't matter if the canvas is a human being, really. I mean, tattooing, if you look at what tattooing is and your canvas, you know, human flesh.
I'm going to get a really killer one soon.
Are you?
Yeah.
All right.
Evelina, Quite Katrina, Bubbleina Head, right here. My doggie.
Okay. Let's talk about L.A., and let's talk about your rebellious streak. You've had offers to move out to L.A. before to try your thing, and we know how the West Coast tries to latch on or create their trends and kind of co-opt them from New York, and there's always that division of artistic integrity, I like to say, that New York likes to think we create things that have integrity and long shelf life. L.A. creates that fame, that flash in the pan, the big money, and then it's like a meteorite.
Right, and none of it, I mean, it's dazzling, and it's definitely like, you know, dangling a hook in front of my face, Hollywood, and the way I've always viewed it, and Hollywood 40s glamour, you know, the red carpet meets rock and roll. Is something that I've always, you know, and I've done time in L.A. I've lived out there, more in Monterey, outside of the whole L.A. Hollywood scene. But trying to be a guest out there, because I do have a lot of bi-coastal clients and clients out there, and liking to get a break from the city, since I'm so thoroughly planted, it was like a nice break. But again, there was nothing that I could visit or be a guest at that was, you know, me and the vibe that I've created here.
Right.
So I was thinking about Chateau Marmont or, you know, a place where I could just sort of create my vibe on its own and never went out there looking for it and didn't find it. And then I was approached by Jason Pomerac and Todd Mitchell to come out to the Roosevelt, which is a, you know, very parallel hotel for me. It was one of the first hotels I was put up at when I was doing Monster Magnet. And I felt the vibe and the old Gregory.
And that's a band for you people out there who don't. One of my favorite bands, by the way.
Monster Magnet?
Truly.
Phil Carbone.
Dave Windorf. I interviewed him.
Dave.
Richard and I did a pilot called, what was it called?
Who was working on this?
Oh, it was this. It was in the early version of Culture Catch in a TV series. And Windorf was with A&M Records. And
wow.
And he did our pilot. Because I was always, I saw them at a heavy metal festival in Amsterdam or Eindhoven. And I was blown away by how charismatic the band was.
Oh, they're incredible.
And I always was blown away. They had huge success in Europe and never really hit here.
Have you seen Heads Explode?
No.
This music video I did. That was the one that I was housed at the Roosevelt for.
What album was
that?
The
Devil Head of Dave
that
I blew up. Yeah. And it was crazy.
I didn't know you did that. Good for you.
Yeah, it was fun.
Yeah. So anyway, you were doing that. You're in L.A.
I was in L.A. I got a real good, you know,
You're staying
niched
at the Roosevelt. That's how you latched into the Roosevelt.
That's how karmically how I did. Like nothing. Everybody thinks I'm like this mastermind of like marketing or how I'm going to do this. Everything is presented. I take a deep breath and I sort of feel it out and I feel the integrity of it. And I got to tell you, the Roosevelt as of now has been a little bit of a threat to me because it is a huge...
It's too hip now?
It's not that any, you know, how hip can you be? And I know that once I get my doors, they open and close. And I know that my vibe is untouchable. I'm not going to get saturated with it, whether or not I'm turning down people that I don't want to be, you know, committed to filter my vibe at all. But it's a bit much.
I can't wait. You're going to be like on Entourage soon. Oh, the HBO.
It's wild. And the biggest
Playing
thing about
April
going
Barton.
Out there is trying to maintain, you know, just, I went out there unexpected because I didn't want anybody to expect me special treat, nothing. And I just wanted to sit by the pool, go into the salon, pop a bottle of champagne, let it go on the floor, just get a vibe and a feel. Aside from all the hoopla, you know, like April, my career, how long and hard I've been at this. What's here for me? Where am I guided to go? And I had a really good feel about it. And I sort of feel that it's a part of my job to bring that non-thing with me and to stay really focused and grounded on what's important and the comfortability and the low-key vibe that people really enjoy and I enjoy working under. Even though this place gets nuts, there's still... an inviting environment that makes you feel comfortable or non-threatened or non-judged or like an individual. You walk in feeling like, you know, you're being welcomed.
Like you're
you
getting a haircut
out.
At home or being styled at home, your own home, as opposed to a factory.
Exactly.
I mean, it's a hip home. I don't mean to denigrate
no,
the vibe
but yeah.
you have. But
Matthew Modine said that in a quote to say it's like going to someone's friend's house.
Right.
And just having good conversation and just happened to have walked out with a great haircut.
Right.
You know, so to create that vibe is, you know, and most of my clients are so stoked, even if they're fairly new here. They're like, oh my goodness, I had no idea that this existed. You know, salons are so intimidating and they just don't feel right. And everybody I hire, you know, it's very far and few and very select bunch of people that could, you know, possibly share this Roosevelt endeavor or being in here, your etiquette and, you know, without being a guru. And if you don't have something nice to say, don't say it.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, you can't be, she's over this one. There's none of that.
Right.
And there's no possessiveness over clients. I just want my clients to be taken care of when I'm unavailable.
Right.
And same thing for them. And no hard feelings. You know, someone comes to me, someone goes to NACI. We tag team people
right.
together. So just sort of nipping the whole salon industry thing in the butt and just not allowing it. And everything's an exception. Bring it up. Let's talk about it. Bring it to the table. You know, you want DJs. You want live music. You want vinyl spun. You want, like, you know, we did art for art, time for time, where kids from downstairs at the guitar store would come up that couldn't afford a haircut. And they play, you know, a sax on the balcony or play a guitar in here for an hour. And they get their haircut.
That's great.
Beautiful exchange of time and art.
I think we've lost some of that in New York. A lot of the artists have moved out because they can't afford it, because we've co-opted this big, giant corporate mentality. I mean, with the money that's come in, we've got everything's a chain of something. And
yeah.
What attracted people like us to New York originally was the individual spirit. And you have, you know, rekindled that flame for a lot of us. There's that individuality that's saying, hey, it's still there. You just have to apply it.
Yeah.
If you're an individual, you don't have to be with the big machine. You can kind of step away from it and do your own thing.
Yeah.
And I mean,
and it's hard. A lot of us do it unconsciously. You know, even looking around the salon, that I absolutely love every inch of this place, but I realized that putting a mirror in front of a chair was something that was just sort of cast to me.
Mm-hmm.
I never really, and it's something that I'm going to attempt changing at the Roosevelt. An aesthetic of cutting hair. I love working with a mirror as a medium.
Mm.
But in that particular format, you've never seen anything done different. So I have an idea. Stay tuned to Roosevelt. So excited.
Let's talk about the artists that live in the Chelsea. Talk about George. And I mean, if these walls could talk, that in itself has got to be kind of an honor to be able to even get this set up here with all that's gone on and all that will continue to go on here. What about this room? Is there any history in this room, 303?
Yeah, from what I understand, when I first opened, a lot of people would say who occupied this space, one in which is a favorite of mine because I knew him in my acting world. They called him Pepe Valentine. He was a famous porn star in the 60s, and he was in a band called The Squirrels.
Oh, I remember The Squirrels.
And
yeah.
Now he's an actor. I have his little 45 here with the sleeve, and he looks the same. Boy, he ages so beautifully. And now he's an actor, and now Pepe Valentine and The Squirrels have dominated his rightful name.
That's amazing.
But he said that the space was always, you know, the door was always open. You know, in the day that Sid and Nancy were up here, the day of their last day on Earth.
Wow.
And it was always an inviting space, and people were always in and out, and you could always rely on the door being open. I said that's, I found it ironic, because that's exactly how I felt when I walked in, was this space was going to house me, and it was going to, the door was going to sort of be, you know, open, and people were going to be coming in and out in a very inviting space. So I think the energy of the space has sort of lingered on.
So for those of who are watching that don't know, the youngsters, Sid and Nancy, Sid Vicious from the Sex Pistols and his girlfriend Nancy. She OD'd here.
Yeah, it's got a heavy vibe.
It's heavy, but you know, like
heavy
artists like Patti Smith lived here.
Yeah, Jimi Hendrix.
Truman Capote.
And they got 4 feet concrete walls between the rooms, so the noise factor, so that's why it was appealing to a lot of musicians, because
right.
they could come in here and blow it out, and there'd be no complaints. And that still sort of happens.
So that energy is part of your energy. I think it's part of any individual's energy.
Yeah,
you
I think,
here,
you know, if you move in here to move in here for the Chelsea Hotel, I mean, the only thing I knew about the Chelsea Hotel was that it had this strong kind of artsy-fartsy, dark kind of, you know, mysterious place for me. I was a little light, bright, and naive, and like, ooh, Chelsea Hotel. But once I got in and found all the things that went down here that were dark, I said, well, and then George. George was my first
George
bit of
Shemesh.
Brightness. Yeah, walking into a cocktail party at his home and meeting his children and the, you know, the books on the shelves and educating me on the hotel and elevated my whole sights for it. And he said, what are you doing? And I said, you know, I just got back from Indonesia. I've been traveling, soul searching. I'm a hairdresser, I'm an actor, I'm all this stuff, but I don't want to open a salon, I don't want to cut out a home, I don't want to run around the city, and I just need, he goes, I think you need to be housed here. Let me introduce you to Stanley and David Bard. And that Monday morning when I met them, and this was the first keyhole that I turned, I immediately walked through that long hallway and was like, I'm home, it's done.
That's a great story, April.
Yeah.
That gave me goosebumps. George is such an amazing man. Yeah. I used to go to his dinner parties. He had a thing for my redheaded girlfriend, which is fine. Let's talk a little bit about the celebrity clientele thing. When a celebrity walks in here, because everyone is not starstruck, typically even the people who come here, they must feel very relaxed. They don't have to worry about, you know, oh, it's so-and-so here, it's Matthew or, you know, whoever else you're cutting.
You know, that brings a smile on my face. The one episode, nobody normally is starstruck, and everyone's super cool. And a lot of the kids don't know who anybody is anyway, and I'm very much like that to begin with, but I know who's coming in here.
Right.
So, you know, I never have to cover my tracks. And anybody that, you know, if I do bands and stuff, I let them dominate the space, or doing, like, a U2 member, you know, I'll meet them after a gig or at 12 o'clock, and, you know, they just don't want to deal with a lot, and that's understandable. So we do a lot of after-hours stuff. But one day in the midst of craziness with not any bit of room to squeeze anybody in, Eric Weinstein calls wanting me to do Mark Wahlberg for some, you know, announcement gig that he has on TV. So he walks in, and he's got a bouncer that I didn't even know would, like, fit through my front door. And he's with a little small little bit of an entourage. The place is buzzing out of control. And everything's cool. I'm like, Mark, glad to meet you, man. Go in the back, pick out a robe, take off your shirt, pick out a robe, and we'll get you shampooed and I'll hit you up. And he's like, cool. He comes back here. I've got two girls shampooing. And he takes off his shirt. And the girls are like pinned to the wall, and they can't move. And I'm seeing him back here, and I'm like, what's going on? And I walk back here, and I'm like, you guys, could you somebody help him? And they're like, they couldn't even. I mean, literally, the Calvin Kleins were sticking out at Star Goldberg, and the girls were like, had no voice, could not look, couldn't do anything. I said, I'm sorry, Mark. Go right back here and pick out a robe. But it was hilarious. I mean, that's when the girls were just paralyzed.
Right. That's great.
Yeah.
That's great. What's one of your favorite songs? Let's listen to one of your songs going out. What do you like to cut hair to? We'll drop it in, and then you can cut Richard. Not cut Richard. You can style Richard. Why do I say cut?
I'm going to cut you. Come any closer, and I'll cut you.
What are you hip to these days?
Well, right now I'm really big on, you know, artists that haven't, you know, I'm very enthusiastic about supporting them. And one boy that's been coming in, Damian Pierce, plays guitar. It's sort of like John Mayer / something, and the songs that he's writing. So I'm very much in the moment right now of Melissa from Scratcher, Damian Pierce.
You have some of their music we can drop?
Yeah, I have Scratcher. Okay. And then Jesus Speed, who's a...
That's right, your man,
James Decker.
James,
he
works
there. That runs
the
desk. So I'll be like, play me a Decker song. And in the middle of the day, he'll pound it out. And there's something about knowing that the man that's answering my phones, that's working really hard for me, you know, is booming in this place and, you know, answering my phones, hello, sweet 303. And I'm like, you know, his CD is fantastic. So I tend to, like, be very on the moment of housing the artists and hearing their works and celebrating them. You know, because we need to elevate them and get them in a position where they can feel planted and secured.
All right. Well, let's go out and we'll cut some hair to one of those.
Okay. All Scratcher right. And James Decker.
You got it.
I'm drowning.
April Barton, you're listening to Dusty Wright with the Culture Catch. April, thank you. Continued success. I love what you're doing here. And anyone who's watching this around the world.
I was going to say, anybody that's watching this, please feel free, come by, visit. You
just
got the Roosevelt,
out.
You got 303.
Just hanging out with April in the salon. It truly is a salon vibe.
Yeah, I'm here by myself today. It's very lonely.
No.
Wait till you come when it's packed.
You've been listening to The Culture Catch. I'd like to thank my engineer, Mr. Dave Lee, and to our sponsors, Final Draft, the industry standard scriptwriting software. Check them out at finaldraft.com. And our new sponsor, WebHSP. For all of your web hosting needs, it's webhsp.com. This is Dusty Wright for The Culture Catch. We'll see you next time. Converge is the word.